Welcome to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, May 20th, 2014. I'm your Tuesday host, Scott Burton. Today on the show, we'll hear from 4th of July Committee Director Gene Stock and Judges Supervisor Ken Nessler about this year's parade. We'll learn about two town hall meetings that Juno NCADD, or National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, is hosting in May. We'll speak with ACS's Hannah Blankenship about the Summer of Heroes Scholarship Program. We'll talk about graduation with principals Paula Kasperson from JDHS, Dan Larson from TMHS, and Kristen Garreau from YDHS, and Michelle Stickler and Shannon West from the Parents for a Safe Graduation Committee will be here to talk about the Safe Graduation Party. That, Writer's Almanac, music, and more here on a Juno Afternoon. Here's National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Each May, the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes in Montana invite students to the Flathead River for an annual river honoring. This year, more than 1,000 students participated. Katrin Fry reports.
The Lower Flathead River already has one dam on it, Kerr Dam, near where the river flows out of Flathead Lake and through the reservation of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes. Education specialist Jermaine White with the Tribal Division of Fish, Wildlife, and Recreation says additional dams downstream were being proposed in the 1970s and 80s.
There's about 72 miles of undisturbed river here, and it's important to the tribes. This was our road. This was we traveled to the west to visit our relatives, our family, and so having that. The river remain in a natural sense as much as possible was really important.
In 1986, the tribes held the first river honoring. Now, it's a two-day field trip where 4th and 5th grade students move through educational stations with topics ranging from wildlife to water quality to native games. Each day starts with a presentation from a tribal elder on the cultural significance of the river. Director for the Salish Ponderay Culture Committee for the tribes, Tony Inkashola, spent much of his childhood in this place, hunting, fishing, and gathering plants along the river bottoms with his family.
I think it's important to get that across to the young people, to get them to look beyond what they see. You know, a lot of times you come and see the river, the first thing you think is the fishing and the swimming and those kind. But you need to look beyond that, what it really means and what it really holds for everybody.
Inkashola says the goal of the honoring is to instill an understanding and appreciation for the river in order to maintain it as is for future generations. For National Native News, I'm Katrin Fry reporting from Northwest Montana.
In Alaska, meetings are scheduled this month to get community input on forming two intertribal fish commissions for the Yukon and Kuskokwim Rivers. KYUK's Ben Matheson reports.
Myron Manning is the president of the Association of Village Council Presidents, which is coordinating the formation of the groups.
What we feel is that the state of Alaska has not managed the fisheries for sustained yield because they're catering more to commercial fishing interests rather than their own citizens.
Manning envisions a co-management structure where tribal leaders work very closely with government biologists. That would involve integrating the knowledge and experience of people who live on the river.
The information that's provided by people that only live here during the summertime and then end up moving during the winter are given more credence than some information that's provided by someone who lives here locally.
There are a number of existing groups that allow public involvement and input into management concerns, like the Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group. Manning says that's not a tribally recognized group and that managers should work directly with tribes.
You need the people in the river system to work with you for the conservation of these species. Not a group of people that are appointed by the state or whatnot saying, okay, we're going to impose this and things like that because, you know, the authority remains with the state or federal agency, yet the people in the villages don't feel that they're part of the solution.
Manning is expecting participation from villages located up and down both rivers. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
In May 1876, executive order created the Cabazon Reservation for the Cabazon Band of Mission Indians. Members of the Southern California tribe moved many times due to settlers and railroad expansion. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. You're invited to Kawanak Broadcast Corporation's second annual reception and fundraiser, Thursday, June 5th at Sandia Resort and Casino in Albuquerque. Enjoy the art auction, meet Kawanak's board and staff, and help raise funds for Native Radio. Learn more at nativenews.net. Native Voice 1. The Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to a Juno afternoon here on Tuesday, May 20th, 2014. And I have been joined in the studio by Mr. Ken Nessler. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you.
And also by Ms. Jean Stuck. Thank you for coming in today, Jean.
My pleasure.
So, Jean, you are on the 4th of July committee, is that correct?
Yes, you could say that. Yes, that's correct.
And you're here to tell us about the parade, how to get into the parade, and all that kind of stuff. Where do you want to start?
I would like to start with our parade grand marshal. It's our pleasure to have Mr. Dick Garrison as our parade grand marshal this year.
He's a musician, right? Longtime musician and trombone
and
player.
And also a fisherman. He's been in every Golden North Salmon Derby since the beginning of time.
Wow.
He's been in every parade since the beginning of time, playing his trombone.
All right.
And the parade theme this year is I Love a Parade, which we thought Mr. Garrison would fit well into that category, too.
Okay.
Just a side note, we have introduced a couple of new categories this year. One under vehicles is watercraft.
Watercraft.
And we plan to have some fun with that one.
Can you get, well, maybe I'll ask you later, but I'd love an example of what that might be like and where they'll be in the
timing. It can be boats, skidoos, anything that comes under watercraft.
Okay, and will they be on trailers or out in the channel?
No. This is a parade on land. No, we're not going to deal with the water. Hopefully, we won't have to deal with the water.
Okay.
But yes, they should be on trailers. The drivers of the vehicles should carry proof of insurance.
Okay.
As anybody should, as the law.
Okay.
Active military, color guard, and youth are all free. The entry forms are not available online.
Okay.
They are available at the Mendenhall Library in the Valley and Cycle Alaska downtown.
Okay.
The parade starts at 11 a.m. This year, the parade is on a Friday. The parade begins at the staging area, which is down by Department of Labor building, down by the Juno Douglas Bridge.
Okay.
And so far, the last word I got is we're going to do the reverse parade route again.
Okay.
And I understand Juno Police Department loves that reverse parade route. The deadline for entries is June 25th. If you miss the deadline, come down anyway. We'll find a place for you. You won't be eligible for awards or judging, but you'll have some fun. And you'll have to pay your entry fee plus your late fee.
Okay.
If you want to look up more of all the fun that we have, you can look us up on the webpage at worldwideweb.juno4thofjuly.net.
Okay.
If you have questions, you can call phone number 790-4444. And someone with all the answers would be happy to call you back.
All right. Well,
and in the staging area, there'll be no parking in that area from 3 a.m. until noon on the 4th of July. We need that whole area behind Fish and Game to bring the watercraft through and get them over into the staging area.
Okay. That's some good info. And today when I was looking for info, I did a Google search for 4th of July Parade Juno, and it took me right to your site, and I found some of this info, so that's nice.
I did that, too. I Googled it just so it would pop up instead of going through this World Wide Web thing. I would like to take a moment to tell you a cute little story. One year in our parade,
okay,
some ladies were riding in a canoe, and they said they prayed and they prayed and they prayed real hard that it wouldn't rain,
mm-hmm,
but they brought their umbrellas just in case.
So hopefully we'll get some of that beautiful spring weather that we've been having.
It won't rain on our parade.
All right. And Ken, you're here to tell us about the Grand Marshal. Is that what you'd like to talk about?
I have a few notes on his biography, so
okay.
I'll go ahead and cover those.
Please do.
Yeah, he was born in 1923 in Blaine, Washington, and actually was adopted by the Garrisons.
Okay.
So that was something I didn't realize. He started playing the baritone and then switched to the trombone. And he's been with the trombone ever since. So he's got about 60 years of parades going on. And he has about, 58, I think, salmon derbies that he's entered.
Wow.
So a lot of experience there.
Mm-hmm. A lot of music, a lot of fish.
A lot of music, a lot of fish. And in fact, he was so good in his younger days that the trombone company even gave him a trombone.
Wow.
So
with his name engraved on it, he still has that trombone to this day, I understand.
Very cool. That must mean a lot to him.
So anyway, he worked for the Army Boeing Aircraft for a while, putting together bombers. And then he was switched over to the ACS, which was under the Army Signal Corps. And in southeast Alaska, all the way up to North Alaska, they had this telegraph or teletypes. It was not... No telephone service. So I remember when I first came up here, it was the same idea. If you wanted something, you ended up sending teletypes. But anyway, from there, he went up to ADAC. He started a dance band. He ran the USO. They ran the dance band Duck Creek, it said, which I didn't even realize that there was some kind of a USO at Duck Creek. So somewhere he wrote that up for us, which I think was kind of neat. Raised four boys and did soundtracks for the Alaska Pictures, which was owned by Chuck Keen, and that's back in the good old days, too. And let's see, he's been played still for the occasional dances and would like... thinks anyway he'd be pretty good at going on cruise ships to play, because that's the only place you can still play waltzes.
Yeah, and let's see, if he was born in 2003, that would be 80.
80.
He's about 91 years old, give or take.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he's been playing the trombone a long time.
Yeah.
And he's still going strong.
With some deep roots here in Alaska, so it sounds like... You've picked a fine Grand Marshal. And like you said, Gene, the deadline for getting in your entries is June 25th. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. At the close of business.
Okay. And to get your entry forms, you can go to the Mendenhall Library in the Valley, or you can go to Cycle Alaska Downtown.
And fill them out, attach your fee if there is any, and return them the same place you picked them up.
And a new category this year, watercraft. We expect very cool and creative things with that, right?
There's one other one, too, under, I think it's marching unit, is we have a new one, most energetic unit.
I like that one, most energetic.
Ken is the judge's supervisor, so if I had time, I'd like to follow him around and see how the judges judge that category.
Well, it's sure going to be fun. And if you want more information on this, you can probably talk to either of these folks by calling 790-4444. Gene and Ken, thank you both so much for coming on today.
Our pleasure.
Hey, sure, thank you.
I love this.
All right. I think I have a good song for you here.
From what I've been hearing, you really got it made. Got a lot of fellas on your lover's hip parade. And if I can be your number one, well, I don't know what I'll do. I wanna be from up to the top, I'm so in love with you. On the hip parade of love, I know I'll never stop. I've got a long, long way to climb before I reach the top. But if I do get there soon, I really have it made. Then I'll know I'm number one on your lover's hip parade. Now it's so hard, I'm after dear, cause you're so nice and kind. Another one to take your place would sure be hard to find. So put your arms around me and be my turtle dove. Then I feel like I'm number one on your hit parade of love. On your hit parade of love, I know I'll never stop. I've got a long, long way to climb before I reach the top. But if I do get there soon, I really have it made. Then I know I'm number one on your lover's hit parade. Together like all good lovers should. We can make a go of it, everything will turn out good. We can have so much fun, we really have it made. Then I know I'm number one on your lover's hit parade. On your hit parade of love, I know I'll never stop. I've got a long, long way to climb before I reach the top. But if I do get there soon, I really have it made.
Welcome back to a Juno afternoon here on All Thanks Anyway, Jimmy Martin. Back here on May 20th, 2014, I'm your host, Scott Burton. And with me now in the studio is the retired past director of NCADD, Mr. Matt Felix. And NCADD, by the way, is the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence. Welcome, Matt. Yeah. Let me get your mic up there a little bit higher. Thanks for coming down today.
Hey, it'd be great. Great day.
Okay. So why don't you start by telling us real briefly about NCADD and what you're all about.
Well, the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence is part of a national organization that started in about 1941 by the first woman in Alcoholics Anonymous, who realized that treating alcoholism as a disease was making progress, but that prevention was a better way to go. So she focused on setting up prevention agencies across the United States. She was fortunate enough to have a benefactor and part of the IBM management families, and she was somewhat wealthy herself, so she, and recovering herself, so set out across the United States and setting up prevention agencies and named them the National Council on Alcoholism to begin with. And we actually came to Alaska once, and there were eight national councils up here at one time. A lot of them still exist. They just don't call themselves national councils anymore. They got into different businesses as nonprofits.
Okay. And there's a couple town hall meetings coming up, but we'll talk about the nuts and bolts of those here in a minute. But you'll be talking about Juno's Healthy Indicators Report, and you are also an integral part of that, weren't you? Can you tell us about that?
Correct. We, the National Council, before I retired, got a grant and to take a good look at Juno's health overall. And we decided to choose a number of years ago a model called a Healthy Indicator Report, which is, if done properly, gives you a good idea of a comprehensive view of a community's health. There's been over 600 communities across the United States and Canada use this model to get an overview of health and mainly to take a look at what are the major health problems within a community. Now, it's not a medical model per se, although it does take a look at things like infectious diseases and low birth weights and stuff like that, but it's a model that gathers data on community health as much as anything, not just clean air, clean water, and that kind of thing, but miles of bicycle paths, how many mammograms per population is done per year. So it's a broad scope of public health measures that brought together in this format called a Health Indicator Report. It gives health planners, city government, and community members a good broad overview of the health status of Juno. And tonight, the National Institutes of Health funded a couple of town hall meetings so we could put together We presented this to the assembly presented it to some universities, and now tonight we're going to present it to the community at large through the town hall model.
And that will be at the Juno Douglas High School tonight from 5:30 to 7:30. And then you have another one tomorrow at Thunder Mountain High School.
Correct.
Same time, right?
We thought, make it convenient.
Sure.
National Institute of Health gave us enough money to advertise and to set up and rent a couple of facilities so that it'd be convenient for the valley as well.
Okay. Can you briefly share one thing that either surprised you from that report or something that we might like to hear about?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that are very surprising that surprised me, and I've been around here 38 years. Number one, Juno is a very, very, very healthy place to live.
Okay.
I was, being in a health care profession most of my life, you see problems, and you might get a little, maybe it was just me, you get a distorted view of the health of the community at large. But I included in this University of Wisconsin study funded by CDC and Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And that study shows that Juneau is the healthiest community in the state by a considerable amount, actually, and not that far off from what they call the national benchmarks, an ideal community in terms of public health concerns. So I was surprised how healthy we are. But then if you take a look at why we do have a community here that's concerned about health, willing to set up programs, build facilities. We have a local government that has a sales tax, special tax on alcohol and tobacco that they put into health. And over the last 25, 30 years, that's really paid off for Juneau compared to a lot of other communities in the state that doesn't have that underwriting financial backing like we do. Dedicated people willing to tax themselves and a dedicated local government willing to focus on this area. That was one thing surprising. And I think the other thing that caught us completely off guard and is catching everybody off guard is how rapidly we're aging.
Hmm.
Our little community is number one in the nation in terms of its rapidity of aging for communities our size. And it's simply a matter of static population. People who are retiring are staying here now because they like the quality of life. Their kids are out of college maybe, and they have their house paid for here, and don't see any place down south that is as healthy and as pleasant to live. And so they're staying here, and no new young people moving into the community created a unique situation where we rapidly aging and went to the top of the chart on that piece of data.
Okay. Well, you'll be talking about this tonight, and if folks would like to learn more about it, you can head over to the Juno Douglas High School. Will that be in the auditorium or
yes,
the community?
Yeah.
Okay. And that's tonight. And also, you can go to Thunder Mountain High School tomorrow, May 21st. If you want more information, you can go to the website at ncaddjuno.org. A good way to learn about the health of our community. Matt, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
No, I think everybody's going to, when we get into this report, be surprised about some of the data that we've gathered over the last 2 years, and I'm proud to live in Juneau, Alaska.
Matt Felix, thank you for your time today.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 20th of May, 2014. W.H. Auden became a U.S. citizen on this day in 1946. He'd moved to the United States in 1939, met his lover, Chester Coleman, in this country, shared a house in New York with Carson McCullers, Benjamin Britten, and others between 1940 and 41. When the war broke out, he volunteered to go back to England and serve in the army, but he was told that he was too old at the age of 32. It was on this date in 1609, the publisher Thomas Thorpe made an entry in the Stationer's Register in London, that entered a book called Shakespeare's Sonnets. And soon after, Shakespeare's Sonnets were published. There were no copyright laws at the time. These may have been published without Shakespeare's consent. The manuscript, full of errors, it appears to be incomplete, may have been an early draft. Thomas Thorpe himself had an unsavory reputation. He was known to have stolen manuscripts, but regardless, it came to print, and it's likely that, had it not, only two of Shakespeare's sonnets would survive today. It's the birthday of Balzac, Honoré de Balzac, born in Tours, France, in 1799, a writer who kept revising his novels even after they had been set in type, so they had to be reset at great expense. He was deeply in debt much of the time, wrote for 14 to 16 hours a day, drinking cup after cup of strong black coffee. In one three-year period, Balzac produced more than 20 works, produced a vast series, more than 90 novels, that he called the Comédie Humaine, the human comedy. Balzac called himself the secretary of French society. Oscar Wilde once said, "The 19th century as we know it is largely an invention of Balzac." And it was on this day, 1883, the Krakatoa volcano began erupting. A German ship was sailing past, saw a column of smoke and ash rising 7 miles into the sky. The volcano was rumbling, spewing out lava, and then in late August, a series of explosions blew the whole mountain and island apart. The explosion heard in Sri Lanka, 4,500 miles away. The tsunami rose to 130 feet, killed 36,000 people. Here's a poem for today by Peg Bresnahan, "In a Country None of Us Called Home." I don't remember what city we were in. Barbara and I ate something in a restaurant I can't name, sat at a table near two women we'd never met, then saw again later at a play I don't recall. I'm uncertain how it happened. We left the crowded theater. Beside them, the four of us bunched on a corner, fanning for a cab. Then the one in a striped dress put two fingers into her mouth and shrilled a piercer, the kind that cuts street lamps in two. It turned out we wanted the same hotel and shared the ride. Barbara asked her to teach us how to whistle. Knee to knee, the way you sometimes wish everyone in the world could sit, our mouths wide open, we laughed like old friends, chins and fingers wet with spit. A poem, "In a Country None of Us Called Home," by Peg Bresnahan, from her collection entitled "In a Country None of Us Called Home," published by Press 53 and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Support comes from Valley Medical Care, offering a team of physicians and nurse practitioners committed to healthy newborns, toddlers, teens, and adults in Southeast Alaska, and proud to support public radio.
Welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Scott Burton, here on Tuesday, May 20th, 2014. And on the telephone with me now is ACS's Hannah Blankenship. Welcome, Hannah.
Hi, thank you so much for having me this afternoon.
Oh, you're welcome. And you're here to tell us about the Summer of Heroes Scholarship Program.
Yeah, so this is the fourth year that we're doing our Summer of Heroes program, and it's a partnership between us, Alaska Communications, and Boys and Girls Clubs Alaska. And with this program, we are promoting awareness and support for youth development programs throughout the state.
Okay. And you'll be giving 5 scholarships, and your target audience for the scholarships is about age 6. What's the age group again?
The age group is 6 to 18.
Okay.
So we are looking for outstanding Alaska youth around the state and in any community who has done outstanding things, either volunteered or raised significant funds for a cause, maybe made a difference in school through education or sports, made a significant contribution either in time or in the form of a donation to their communities, or inspired others to take action. And so we're looking for 5 outstanding kids to award these scholarships to. We'll be selecting 5 heroes at the end of the summer and awarding them each with a scholarship.
I hesitated when I was talking about the age group. I was like, 6? Oh, I must have written that down wrong. But it is 6, and I like how, what a range you have there. So you're looking for young folks as well as folks that are up to 18. So that's interesting.
Yeah, throughout the program, actually, we've had the pleasure of awarding scholarships to kids through that entire age range. So last year we had a 9-year-old and then a 17-year-old as well, and then kids in between. So it's the most fun and inspiring program to work on, because we get to see all of these kids throughout our state who are just giving back, being so selfless, being involved in their communities, and doing some really inspiring things.
Well, if one of our listeners right now knows of someone between 6 and 18, how can they nominate one of these young heroes?
So we have application forms on our website, so alaskacommunications.com, or you can go to a Boys and Girls Club clubhouse or to an Alaska Communications store. So in Juneau, I believe we have one in Lemon Creek.
Okay. Do you have any examples of somebody that's won in the past that you could share with us, someone you're especially proud of?
Yeah, absolutely. We had a great group of kids last year. So last year we had a 9-year-old who was very active in the American Diabetes Association, and she had raised a bunch of money through Tour de Cure because she was really into biking, and so she's raised over $10,000.
Wow.
for the association with the help of her friends and family. So that was a great example of a young person, again, being so selfless and finding a cause that she was dedicated to and kind of taking it on her own and making that her cause that she was going to champion. And then we also had a 17-year-old in Saldovia who was a volunteer firefighter, and he had been volunteering since he was 14.
Wow.
Yeah. And so we kind of loosely define a hero as, someone who's given back to their community, and that can be in any sort of way. And throughout the year, we've just seen some outstanding youth. So we don't have very, very strict guidelines. We really want to hear from kids around the state and the great things that they're doing, and then we want to celebrate them. So, again, we'll be giving away 5 scholarships to kids for $1,500, and then we'll also be celebrating them in a special ceremony at the Alaska State Fair.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
And again, to nominate, folks can go to the website, ACS, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, alaskacommunications.com. And then our partner for this program is Boys and Girls Clubs Alaska. So you can also visit a clubhouse
and
get a nomination form there.
Okay. Well, Hannah Blankenship, thank you for sharing the scholarship opportunity with our listeners today. Anything else you'd like to add that I may have forgotten to ask?
No, we just want to put a plug out there for Boys and Girls Clubs. We're really proud to partner with them for this program. This is the 4th year that we've done that. And as a company, we've been in Alaska for more than 100 years, and we're really invested in the future of our state. And a big way that we believe in supporting the future is through youth and through education. And so it's very important to us to support these programs and for other folks now as well. Boys and Girls Clubs has lost a significant amount of federal funding over the past couple of years. So we want to try to support them however we can. So if you're listening and you don't have a hero to nominate, another way that you could help out is by visiting an Alaska Communications store. And for each smartphone that is purchased from now until July 15th, We'll be giving $25 from that purchase to Boys and Girls Clubs as well.
Okay, sounds like a good deal. Hannah, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye. To a Juno afternoon here on Tuesday, May 20th, 2014. Scott Burton, your host, and now in the studio with me from JDHS Principal Paula Kasperson. Welcome, Paula.
Hello.
Nice to see you. And from Thunder Mountain High School Assistant Principal Rhonda Hickok. Welcome, Rhonda.
Thank you.
And from YDHS Principal Kristen Groh.
Hello.
Nice to have you three in the studio today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Nice to be here.
We'll be talking about graduation. You're all wrapping things up for the year, right?
We are. Yes, we are. Check, check, check.
How many days of school left, give or take?
We're all trying to count on our fingers. Five and a half, six. We've got about five more days.
And are the seniors still at school? Or I used to remember kind of an early graduation thing.
No, they're still at school.
Oh, how are they doing at this
point? They're hanging in there. There's a lot of energy in the building, a lot of excitement.
Okay.
Sunday is coming up quick.
Yeah, so tell us about graduation proper, where it happens, how it happens, all that kind of stuff.
Well, each school has its own graduation ceremony, and it's going to start at 1 o'clock is the first one, and that's the Yakusuke Dakuhiri graduation, and it's at Centennial Hall.
Okay.
And it's great. It's a family event. I actually have never been to a Yakusuke Dakuhiri graduation, so I'm excited to see what it's like. Because I think it's different than the traditional high school graduation. We have fewer students, obviously, graduating. Our school is smaller. We have 37, I believe, graduates this year, which is very exciting.
Yes.
And each of those kids and their families are excited that they're there. Mm-hmm. And so it's a big celebration and a little bit more informal in some ways. Lots of people, lots of celebrating, and it's great.
Okay. And do all three take place at Centennial Hall?
They don't. The next graduation celebration is 4 o'clock, and that's for JDHS, for Juno Douglas High School, and that takes place at our high school.
Okay.
Our doors will open at 3 o'clock. We are expecting 164 graduates, many of whom are still hustling in the last couple days of school. We have some student speakers. We have a guest commencement speaker. Our faculty will be there wearing red and black to cheer on the celebration.
Okay. And what time is Thunder Mountain?
Ours is the culminating this year. I would say every year, every other year, we switch with JDHS. So last year we were at 4, and this year we're going to be at 7. So our doors open at 6, and we'll be starting ours right at 7. And we are expecting, with high hopes, 158 graduates this year. So we have a very traditional format that we followed for a number of years, like 5. This is our fifth graduation ceremony that we're hosting, and very happy to do so. It's really nice going from our first of holding it in the auditorium to now we're in the gymnasium, and mm-hmm. it's just it feels like we've have a establishing some traditions now, so it's going to be quite nice.
And I noticed that each of you sort of gave the number tentatively, so you have a few borderline students who have a few assignments left to do.
Well, you asked if seniors were still around,
uh-huh.
and they are still around. I mean, there's still work to be done,
right?
And it really is right up until graduation practice on Friday.
Wow.
So there are certainly it's a big deal. They start this, you start your planning for graduation in kindergarten. So it's exciting to see that energy, and there is some question for some kids, but they're pushing, and we're pushing.
And I bet the sunny weather that we've been having hasn't helped.
And a carnival? There was a carnival.
This was all challenging, yes.
Thankfully, it started raining.
Yeah, right?
I think everyone
was like, oh, thank you.
But then it needs to be sunny again for the weekend,
yes.
For Sunday.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
What have been a couple highlights? Anyone want to share from the year for all of you?
Well, this is Kristen. I'm going to share for me and for Paula and that I think we're both excited about culminating our first year as building school principals.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's the first year of being in that realm at all, and so it's I'm celebrating along with the kids that I made it to the end of the year, and I'm looking forward to the next year.
And I just think I think it's been so much fun to continue my experience at JDHS as a Crimson Bear with these students and these parents and this faculty. And I feel really the highlight has been to continue that.
Okay. And Rhonda?
Well, I would say this is my first year in the school district of not having any kids. So my last child graduated last year. So the first year of celebrating with everybody else in graduating all their children is just, it's a different feeling. It's been a different feeling this year not having a kid in school, but going through just as an administrator in a school, caring about all the kids and ensuring that they get through successfully has just been a very different experience for me. It's been great.
Okay. I know principals and assistant principals work very hard and put in lots of hours, so must be kind of nice to wrap that up. And I know you'll probably even be working into the summer some, but then you'll get a little bit of a summer break. Principals do get a little time off, right?
We do.
Yeah. Yes, we do.
And we hope it's sunny then, too.
Yes. Well, you three, congratulations on another school year, and congratulations on all of your graduates and graduation coming up. Is there anything else that you'd like to add today?
I would say that the culminating event for graduation is the Safe Graduation Party.
Mm-hmm. And we get to talk about that next.
Yes, yeah. So that's coming up.
Yeah, great.
Oh, you're talking about it with the next group.
Yeah, Michelle Strickler and Shannon will be in, so we get to talk about that next.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to that.
Okay.
Well, you three, thanks again, and congratulations, and have a nice summer.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right.
This song is called Vera Flew the Coop.
Vera flew the coop when she was only some 16. She hopped the first and fastest train with some lousy libertine. He spun a pretty story and he stole away her youth. And everyone was shocked 'cause Vera only told the truth. Oh, her slip surprised them all 'cause Vera only told the truth. But Vera dumped that lion loud in the dust behind the train. He'd angled for a child, but he caught a heartless hurricane. He wasn't worth a bullet, she just pushed him off the side. And she thanked him for her freedom, she was eternally polite. Polite. Vera thanked him for his trouble, 'cause Vera wasn't nothing but polite. Polite. Never flinched, never smiled, and her gun was always cocked. By 21, she terrorized the whole of the frontier, and they feared her faithful justice. They knew Vera was sincere. They all ran from Vera's posse, 'cause Vera was so perfectly sincere. Not one of them was worthy in her steady, steely eyes, 'cause they all fronted for their flaws, and Vera only sneered at lies. Vera found all men were liars, and Vera couldn't live with lies. Desire.
'Cause the man who shot her through was the only man she could admire. That mortal wound awoke in her fire. No balm could soothe, and she said, I think I love you. And Vera only told the truth.
This is it. Last chance to see Perseverance Theater's hit comedy, Boing Boing. Grab a friend and hop on board to the hottest destination in town as the show must close this Sunday. Catch a flight to this hilarious comedy that is selling out and keeping audiences in stitches. An American living in Paris tries his hand at managing his three airline hostess fiancés. But when Boeing invents a better, faster jet, the hijinks and hilarity begin. Running through May 25th. For more information, please visit PerseveranceTheater.org or call 463-TIXS.
Welcome back to a Juno afternoon, and before that PSA there about Boeing Boeing, we heard some music by Marion Call. She'll be playing at COPA this Thursday at 7 p.m. with Laura Zahasky, so that should be a fun show. With me now in the studio are two members of the Parents for a Safe Graduation Committee, Michelle Strickler. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you.
And also Julie Hamilton. Welcome, Julie.
Thanks.
Thanks for coming into the studio today, you two, and we'll be talking about the Safe Graduation Party that's happening on Sunday night. But I'd also, before we get to that, I'd like to learn a little bit more about Parents for a Safe Graduation Committee. How did it come to be, Michelle?
Okay. Well, Scott, I've been involved with Parents for a Safe Graduation on several different occasions. This is my third senior to graduate.
Wow.
And my second in Juno. And as Parents for a Safe Graduation, we're really excited to host this kind of event. What we think is probably the 20th year or so for Parents for a Safe Graduation in Juno. I look back through my very thick binder, and I can see notes back to 1996. And at that time, it was already referred to as an annual event. So Parents for a Safe Graduation has been hosted by parents as a free event for all of our graduating seniors for many years now.
Okay, and it takes place this coming Sunday night and at Centennial Hall, too? Or?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yep. Graduation for our seniors occurs throughout the day at various locations. Yakus graduates at 1 p.m. at Centennial Hall, JDHS at 4 p.m., TMHS at 7 p.m., both in their high school gyms. And then I think Homebridge, IDEA, and Raven may have different graduation times, but all graduates are to come together, we hope, at Centennial Hall that night, Sunday night, at 10 p.m., for what we think will be a party they will remember. And the event lasts until 2:14 in the morning.
And 2:14, I guess,
mm-hmm.
2014.
Yeah, he can kind of put that one together. But what's remarkable, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of the prizes they have, but those seniors want to be there at 2:14 in the morning because the grand prize is awarded, which is, you can imagine, $2,014.
What? 2014?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Back in my day, we got like $15 or like the free ice cream or something.
Well, I think that they'll be excited to see who wins that prize, and there'll be many other prizes and fun activities throughout the evening.
Speaking of money, Julie, you're the treasurer
of
this organization. Can you tell us a little bit about the financials and what's going on with that?
Sure. Well, we budgeted this year for fundraising $26,000, but we're also getting non-cash donations from a lot of businesses around town, which is great. So we're fundraising probably more closer to $30,000-$35,000 with all in. So we've done pretty good so far. It's been, as far as fundraising goes, it's been one of the easiest fundraising jobs I've dealt with because the community's been so amazing. You know, donating, companies are donating, you know, parents are donating. It's just awesome.
It's a great cause. The party makes so much sense.
Right. And all the parent volunteers have been awesome just taking this party and putting it together. And so it's been a great team to be on. And of the, you know, 26,000 plus money that we're getting, more than half of it goes to prizes straight to the students. And then we have another 3,000 in gifts we're giving to students, you know, senior gifts. And
mm-hmm.
and things like that. We're paying for some amazing food for throughout the night. And like Michelle said, $2,014 at 2:14 a.m. And we're giving away a brand new crisp $100 bill every 15 minutes to a student.
What?
Yes. So.
Can I go? Like, do you have to be a student to go to this
party? As a matter of fact, we're so glad you asked, Scott, because we are still looking for volunteers to run the evening. Because as you can imagine, if we have 400 seniors and their friends, we do need something of an army of responsible adults keeping all the games flowing, keeping everything on track, serving food. And so we do have a way for any of the parents or community members who are interested in volunteering can come tonight to our last planning meeting at 7 o'clock at Thunder Mountain High School, or can contact our volunteer coordinator, Kathy Hudson, at HUD1392@AOL.com.
If there's a young person, a graduate out there listening right now, is like, I don't know if I'm going to go to the party, what might one of you tell them to convince them? They're like, oh, there's money and there's games. What else might you tell them?
There's a great DJ, one of the favorite DJs in town, White Chocolate, will be playing for most of the night. And we've got some poker games they can play and win prizes. There's some art. There may even be a masseuse who could give a neck rub if you're tired at 1 a.m. after all the dancing.
Wow.
So there's a lot going on. It's all of Centennial Hall is set up, and it'll be, and there'll be a photographer as well, so they can keep those memories.
Every year, parents try to come up with some new things to add to the excitement of Safe Grad, and there are a few secrets that we're going to hold back, but let me just say, boxer short bingo, if that is interesting to some people, and I'm not going to say anything else about it.
Wow. If people want to learn more about this, like you said, they can come to the meeting tonight at Thunder Mountain High School. Mm-hmm. Or can you give us the email address again? Was it Kathy Hudson?
Yes. Kathy Hudson is HUD1392@AOL.com.
Well, Michelle Strickler, Julie Hamilton, thank you both so much today. Do we have any more details that we have to add?
One quick thing.
Yeah.
We have some awesome business sponsors in town, and the City and Borough of Juneau has given us $3,000 towards the project, and Holland America also gave us $1,000, and we have a lot of businesses giving $500 or so.
Well, that was very generous of them.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Well, thanks you too, and thanks for your hard work putting this safe party together. Thanks to all the volunteers. Thanks to all the kids that will go. And I hope you have a great event on Sunday night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We'd like to continue with a Woody Shaw composition, in case you haven't heard.
I'm Michael, a Tlingit and a native of Alaska. Some people in my tribe call me a ghost walker. That's because smoking gave me COPD. That's a disease that makes it harder and harder to breathe, and you can die. My COPD is so bad, my doctor gave me 5 years to live, if I'm lucky. My tip for you is to quit smoking now and live your life as a person, not as a walking ghost.
You can quit. We can help. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon today. Tomorrow, Wednesday, Lori Scandaline will be your host. We'll talk with Tony Woodcock from the New England Conservatory of Music about his Wednesday night presentation before the Juneau World Affairs Council. Daniel Fox will be here to highlight his Minute of Nature series. We'll hear about a unique fundraiser for teen organizations. And we'll talk with Katrina Pearson and Dan Henry about this year's Northwoods Writers Symposium in Skagway. If you missed a Juneau Afternoon or want to listen again, you can catch it and other local, statewide, national, and international news at ktoo.org. Looks like the weather tomorrow, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 53, light winds. Thursday, partly cloudy, slight chance of rain, highs around 60, northwest winds to 10 miles per hour. Stay tuned for All Things Considered.